ladies and gentlemen. Welcome into the Lineup Logic Podcast, the daily fantasy podcast bringing you lineup constructions ideas for the DFS slate to come on FanDuel. I'm your host, Sean Kane. It's Thursday, July 27th. And we are looking at a split slate, very small slates here. Only three games on the early slate, five games on the main slate. Not a ton to choose from after, you know, a couple bigger nights in DFS. We have one kind of small slate here. And last night was weird. Guys, I don't know if you listened to yesterday's podcast backwards. I said, what was the secret code to yesterday's slate? Which was stack the Royals and the Marlins with Jimmy Nelson. Yeah, but you had to listen to it backwards. It was like the John is Alive thing. Beatles album, you know, backwards. Anyway, I'm sorry. What I mean, the Marlins score 22 runs. When does that happen? Usually they dribble out three and call it a night. One Stanton homer and a D Gordon first inning double and they're over. I couldn't predict it. I was mad that I did not have more Royals exposure. The Cubs were fine, absolutely no problem, but I decided to get my leverage in some other spots that didn't pan out. God, man, the Royals, I am so bullish on the Royals so often, and I just miss them some nights. I miss them. Anyway, but what are you going to do, man? That's what happens. Somebody won all the money. It was there to be won. It was not me. I will say that. It was not me. I was, and I was deeply, deeply saddened by Mike Fiers. Okay. I don't want to talk about it, but Phillies, you break my heart. You're breaking my heart. Aaron Nola, by the way, the last minute, Fern was all over Twitter talking about Aaron Nola. And he was right. He was right. The Houston team total started dropping. Nola was cooking because Houston without, you know, Springer, Correa, who else dropped in that lineup? I forget who else, but Springer, Correa, all those guys without them, they're a pretty average team and they showed that. Bregman. Yeah. Good call by Fern, but hey, we got Thursday baseball to talk about, so let's go ahead and we're going to look at the... I'm going to give you a little bit of a preview of the early slate, some ideas as you're thinking about the early slate to look at, and then we'll jump into the main slate for the full player breakdown. All right, so early slate, three games, okay? You got Brewers Nationals, 8-run total here. Blazek versus Scherzer. Nationals implied for 4.9 runs to the Brewers, 3 runs. And, you know, makes a lot of good sense. This line is holding steady here. Blazek is not a wonderful pitcher. Very, you know, as a righty here coming up against the Nationals, you have to like the lefties on the Nationals side. Blazek getting called up. He's been bouncing back and forth AAA. Not great. His numbers are not excellent. So you could certainly stack the Nationals lefties. The difficulty is that they are damn expensive. So unless you get a cheaper lineup with, you know, Stephen Drew and Adam Lind in the top five, it's going to be pretty difficult to get to them because you definitely want to get to Scherzer at 11-7 against the Brewers who just swing at everything. You know, okay, Scherzer has a hard contact issue, sure. And the Brewers hit home runs, sure. But let's not forget that the Brewers, of course, can strike out like crazy. And they own a 26% K rate right now in the last 30 days against right-handed pitching, below average WRC plus, well, average, I call it. But, you know, certainly it does not worry me. I think Scherzer can take advantage of this, you know, and get to that double-digit Ks that we expect from him. So you got to find room for Scherzer. That's kind of the name of the game in this slate. Angels, Indians, 9.5 runs projected in Cleveland this finale. JC Ramirez versus Trevor Bauer. This is very interesting. This line opened with the Indians as implied for 5 total runs. and it moved towards the Angels. There's been reverse line movement on this game towards the Angels, which makes a lot of good sense. You know, you have Trevor Bauer, who is easily the lowest, you know, the lowest strikeout pitcher on the certainly not the best pitcher in the Cleveland rotation. Struggles, you know, with some hard contact and stuff like that. And you know, we've seen the Angels get to a couple of the other pitchers here, and I think what they're saying is Angels plate discipline should be able to get to Bauer in this situation. Vegas likes, you know, if the Sharps like the Angels, I think I could get interested in some value Angels here. It'd be interesting to see what their lineup does. You know, it kind of feels like it's different a lot. Obviously, you can go to Mike Trout and feel good about that. But Andrelton Simmons has been really, really, really productive. And Luis Valbuena is another piece that hits righties really well. So those are two guys that I'm keeping my eye on, depending on their lineup spots. Of course, the Indians are in an excellent spot here, implied for 5.1 runs, one of the higher totals on the slate. In fact, the highest total on the slate versus J.C. Ramirez. I mean, JC gets shelled by lefties. He really struggles, also struggles with righties. So you have to go right back to Bradley Zimmer in the leadoff spot. We are going to keep playing Bradley Zimmer until he is 3.6. Okay. Then we'll think about it. But as long as he's 3K in the leadoff spot and hitting this well, we have to keep playing him. So Bradley Zimmer will be in 100% of lineups this afternoon, as he should be. The rest of the Indians are priced up. Hot week. They're playing really well. Jose Ramirez is the only guy who hasn't seen a massive bump in his price, and I love him in this spot against a righty. He hits them better than he does lefties. So I definitely am comfortable with Jose Ramirez at 3.6. And then the A's Blue Jays game, 9 runs projected here, Sean Manaea versus Marcus Stroman. Blue Jays implied for 5 runs to the Oakland 3.9. Now, Stroman could certainly get going against the Athletics. The difficulty you have here, and he's priced really well, 8.6 is a really, really excellent price for a great pitcher against a team that just is not doing anything these days. But the Blue Jays very good against lefties, and no joke, it's Justin Smoke, guys. I mean, I don't have to tell you this is the best hitter on the Blue Jays. No question about it. Justin Smoke by far the best hitter. The issue is against lefties. The issue is that Kendrys Morales is the guy who's right behind him. Jose Bautista's numbers against lefties, unimpressive. Josh Donaldson this season, unimpressive. Russell Martin, pretty unimpressive. In fact, it's really some of the cheaper guys like the Steve Pierces of the world who have actually been a little bit more effective. So my hope, my Christmas wish is that Steve Pierce gets bumped up in the lineup, maybe over Troy Tulowitzki, for God's sake, please. And I will go to maybe a cheap Kendrys Morales at 3K. He's going to help you fit in Scherzer. If you can get in Justin Smoke, play Justin Smoke. But that's it, guys. I'm going to go look for some combination of, you know, some value pieces. I'm absolutely going to play Bradley Zimmer. I'm looking for a combination of some value pieces, maybe a cheap Angels bat, maybe a cheap, Matt Joyce in the leadoff spot for the A's is not the worst thing that you could do. You know, he's got a matchup with Stroman. He's a very productive batter who, you know, even for a bad matchup is a guy who probably won't blank you. He's productive. He's not going to, you know, necessarily always get you a home run, but at 2.8K is a leadoff bat. That's a kind of value piece that maybe you just kind of bite your lip and plug him in, you know, cause you're kind of like, eh. Steven Drew is a cheap bat too. That might help you get him in there. Get in, you know, and of course you can always look at the guys who are going up against Scherzer who have steep discounts on their price tags, you know, Travis Shaw at 3K and Eric Thames at 2.9. You know, you kind of, if you, one of them hits a solo shot, you're still up 15 points in that situation, right? I mean, it's kind of an upside downside type play if you have Scherzer in that line. So that's what with their early slate. Let's move on to the main slate and, talk about the 5 games that we have coming up here. First game of the night, Tampa Bay versus New York in Yankee Stadium. We've got 77 degrees and a little bit of rain in the forecast, but nothing serious. 8.5 runs projected here. Chris Archer versus CC Sabathia. Yankees are small favorites here. Both teams implied for just over 4 runs. Rays at 4-1, Yankees 4-3. You have to think Archer's going to be one of the more popular pitchers on this slate, but then again, at the same time, people get scared off by Yankees against right-handers, as they should. Yankees against righties have been excellent all season long, especially in this small ballpark. I think one thing that I'm reassured by is, you know, Archer has been consistent, even with the hard contact numbers being up, even being a power pitcher who gives up home runs, kind of like a, you know, a Max Scherzer or Jake DeGrom, a righty that gives up the home run to lefties. He's still going to get strikeouts. He's still going to work deep into games. He's not going to give up too many walks and struggle in that respect. So we'll certainly consider Archer on this slate, even though he is going into Yankee Stadium. Cincinnati-Miami, this game, Miami gums off of their 22-run bash fest, heads back home to take on the Reds. Robert Stevenson versus Chris O'Grady, 9 total here, Miami. With a 4.8 implied total, and the Cincinnati with 4.1. You know, these two guys, Stevenson getting called up, been bouncing back and forth between AA, AAA, O'Grady getting called up for the, I believe, his third start. He got called up in July, his third start here. This game is, you know, I guess it's, I would call it highly stackable only because you have two guys who are questionable as far as, you know, track record, what they're going to offer. But I think you have to like the Miami side of this. Stevenson's 2016 numbers indicate that he certainly can get hit, so we're interested in that. Diamondbacks Cardinals, Zach Godley versus Luke Weaver. 82 degrees in Busch Stadium, a little bit of wind, a little bit of rain, but nothing terrible. It doesn't look like it's going to cause any major issues here. No line has been released in this game, and my guess is that that's primarily because they don't feel like they have a good beat on, they don't have a good beat on, you know, exactly who this Luke Weaver kid is. And Luke Weaver just getting called up from AAA, I believe. Yeah. Well, he's got numbers from, you know, he's bounced back and forth. That's what I'll say. He's bounced back and forth. He's had a couple, you know, he had 3 innings this year and, you know, somewhere in the neighborhood of, you know, 30, 40 innings last year. So there is some data on him, but Vegas has not set a line for this game yet. Cubs-White Sox, this series continues. 10.5 runs projected here. John Lester versus Mike Pelfrey. Cubs are massive favorites in this one. But the White Sox are implied for over 4 runs. That's interesting against Lester, okay? Something to keep your eye on. They're not giving, Vegas has not given Lester a ton of respect in this one. And, you know, this line has, the total has moved in the favor of the Cubs in this one. No doubt about that. And then, you know, the team total for them has gone up against Mike Pelfrey. Bad pitcher, no doubt. Certainly have the lefties to get to him on the Cubbies. We'll talk about it. Mets Padres, 8.5 runs projected here. Chris Flexen versus Luis Perdomo. Flexen is getting called up from Double A, and this guy is basically the Mets version of Luis Castillo. He's got good stuff. We're going to talk about him. Very, very interesting cat. And you get the Padres in this situation. You know, Padres against a lefty, that's a thing. We saw it last night against Steve Metz. But Padres against a righty, kind of a different animal. So certainly can look at Chris Flexen in this one as an interesting possibility. But that's it. Only 5 games. Let's jump into the player breakdown and figure out who we love. Who do you love? Oh, God. Before I go into the player breakdown, I'm an idiot. I made a note of this at the top of the slate, and I completely forgot, top of my notes, I completely forgot to announce it. Hey, the winners of the review giveaway, 3 guys, 3 loyal listeners. I'm proud. I'm proud. I'm I'm happy. I put the names, all the names, jumbled up all the names in the, you know, some like random name picker thing, app online, and I got three names, three guys who are going to take home their fantasy football book of choice. I just read the Fantasy Football Black Book. I read it in one night. I just sat down, glued, read it in one night. Highly consumable, absolutely excellent read. That said, I've read the other two books. The 4-for-4 book by Chris Raymond is literally the text, a DFS football textbook. Like, this is the closest thing to a textbook on DFS football that you need. Like, you will learn in the fundamentals of DFS football in a numbers-driven way. No, for no better source than 4-for-4. In fact, 4-for-4, guys, is one of my favorite football outlets. Everything that they touch turns to gold. I love those guys. And then the last book, Jonathan Bales, Fantasy Football for Smart People. I've read the whole Jonathan Bales series, pretty much his baseball, his basketball, his football. He is an excellent, excellent writer. And in fact, speaking of John Bales, there's an article, if you pay attention to my timeline, there's an article I want to retweet that he wrote for 4-for-4, which was just, I mean, just epic. It was about multi-entering tournaments, and epic is a strong word. Excellent. Now, not to diminish the quality of writing, but to basically to highlight the fact that it was a very easy piece to read that I think lent some clarity to something that's constantly discussed and debated in the DFS world, which is multi-entry tournaments. You know, he addressed the question of basically recreational players saying, well, I'm at a constant and complete disadvantage when there's these multi-entry tournaments because other players, volume players, pros, have the advantage of basically playing every combination of players that they want. He said, could be true. Absolutely. That said, it does two things. One, it creates massive prize pools for people. That's good for DFS. That's true. Two, it actually leads to more diversification of lineups, because the security of knowing that you can multi-enter a tournament and have exposure to numerous different teams, stacks, players that you're interested in, that's going to allow you to feel more secure in variance. You're not as nervous about taking flyers and contrarian plays when you're not in a single-entry tournament. So his thought was, in a multi-entry tournament, it's almost even better to create what should be considered an optimal lineup, because you know that there's going to be a lot of dead weight. And people who have taken an approach in trying to be contrarian in a multi-entry tournament, that you're going to naturally have diversity, and you're not going to see as high ownership on certain players as you would necessarily in, say, a cash game. Makes a lot of sense. Very, very interesting. Very, very interesting. Whereas in a single entry tournament, it's much harder for people with one bullet to say, I'm going to get away from what would be an optimal play in this situation, be contrarian. And that's where a contrarian play is most well served, in a single entry tournament. Absolutely excellent read. And he makes very good points about the industry. And I think, you know, the whole, well, we can't keep up because there is, you know, you guys are playing too much volume and da 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 da. Of course, you're good because you multi-enter these tournaments and hundreds of lineups. And you know what? That's fine. Put up or shut up. If you don't want to play the game, don't play. It's fucking gambling. If you don't want to gamble, don't gamble. If you're worried about losing, then you shouldn't play. I mean, give me a fucking break. The whole complaining about sharks. I mean, hey, listen, I can't keep up with Chipotle Addict. I can't keep up with Papa Gates. I'm not trying to. I can't. Every once in a while, I'll take some money from some other guys whose bankroll looks like mine, and I'm good with it. But I'm not trying to get my name on the Roto Grinders leaderboard and pay them more. I said that before. So, I mean, that I think is one takeaway from this article is, you know, the recreational player who's concerned about, you know, volume players taking over the, fine. If you don't want to play with those guys, don't play with those guys. If you don't want to play, don't play. You're not going to win every time. That said, Stefan, Kenny, James, you are the winners. You are the winners of the giveaway. I can't believe I went through that whole thing and I almost completely forgot to win. forgot to give away the books. Stefan, Kenny, James, you guys, you know who you are. You entered in the retweet review giveaway. Hit me up on Twitter. Hit me up in the Slack channel. I talk to you guys all the time anyway. Awesome. Tell me what book you want. Tell me what book you want, and I'll send it to your front door. E-reader, too. I'll send it to your e-reader if you've got an e-reader. By the way, one thing about these books, guys, and I'm going to get to the player breakdown. Sorry. So freaking cheap on ebook. If you are willing to read this on your iPad or willing to read it on your phone even in the Kindle app, you can get these books for literally half the price. The Fantasy Football Black Book on ebook is $5. So really, really good stuff. But, you know, the hard copies are totally, totally excellent as well, because you can mark them, page, you know, underline, make notes, that kind of thing. You know, old school. I'm a teacher, so I like when books are marked up. All right, pitcher breakdown. Gosh, jeez, this is a big windup. All right, pitcher breakdown, main slate. Here we go. Chalk pitchers, John Lester, Chris Archer. Who are you going to go for? I just went straight for the comparison. Compare and contrast here. I didn't try to pick one necessarily. I won't get there until the end. Lester versus the White Sox, okay? We're going to compare the opponents within the last 30 days because these two teams, well, the Yankees are evolving primarily because we've seen their roster fluctuate with injuries, people coming and going, and then you've seen the addition of a couple of the young guys. So I think it's important that we look in the last 30 days towards things like strikeout rate, hard contact rate, things like that. So Lester is getting the White Sox. In the last 30 days against left-handed pitching, they have a 26% strikeout rate and a 58 WRC+. I'm not kidding. On the season, their numbers are very respectable. Recently, absolutely terrible. Only a 25% hard contact rate. They are not hitting lefties at all. You're going to see this recent stretch drag their metrics down against lefties all the way to average below average, because they were excellent at the beginning of the year. It's just not the case anymore. Lester has been rough at times this year, though, okay? He still manages to only give up 28% hard contact to righties, okay? And that's really where you worry about him. He's elite versus lefties. But against righties, he does struggle. And, you know, we've seen him in some games where he gets attacked by just straight righties who swing freely, a la the Padres, and he can actually get hit pretty hard. So it certainly is a concern. You know, I think that 9 right-handed bats going after Lester, even though they have been striking out so much, you have to worry a little bit, which is why Vegas, I think, has implied this team for over 4 runs. If nothing else, maybe it's a walk and a dinger, and then all of a sudden you're 2 runs. That happens a couple times, and boom, Lester's given up 4 before the 5th. You know, that kind of thing can happen. It's happened to him this year before, and he's a head case. That said, he also had a double-digit strikeout game in one of his last 3 starts. He's been kind of keeping it together. So do I worry? Yes, I do worry. But I still think that the White Sox are in a team that we can attack with lefties for sure, based on some of their measurables. Archer has the Yankees. He has been basically the same pitcher all year. Hard throwing, high K rate, about 30%. Not walking a ton of guys, but giving up hard contact. Max Scherzer, Jake DeGrom, one of these guys. Hard throwing guy who gives up hard contact, fly balls, but gets strikeouts. You know, his last 30 days against the Yankees, their WRC plus is just 100. Straight average, 23% strikeout rate, 30% hard contact rate. They've been dead middle of the pack. I think the changes in the lineup, the adjusting, people coming back in off an injury, you know, that kind of thing. A couple of the young guys, Clint Frazier coming up, you know, Matt Davidson added to the roster. All that kind of thing, you add that up, it just kind of, I think they'll settle down at some point and start to hit again, like they were in June, but we haven't seen it in a while. You know, he has the higher K rate than Lester by about you know, 6 to 8 percentage points. That's a real deal. That's serious. But his hard contact is just already going to cause you to tilt. 42% hard contact to lefties, 34 to righties. It just that kind of thing in that ballpark does not play well. That concerns me. But his wOBA splits are lower than lefties and righties. So, you know, what do you have to go to? You have to go to the, you know, the kind of tiebreakers here. Ballpark, well, it's not any use because Yankee Stadium and Guaranteed Rate are both hitters' parks. It's simple. Weather's about the same in both situations, too. There's not, you know, neither one of these stadiums is 90 degrees with the wind blowing out. But BVP, not that useful. There's a couple guys who are good, and that's it. You know, Jose Abreu versus John Lester, very good. Brett Gardner versus Chris Archer, very good. Okay, well, could have predicted that. You know, and I think the only thing that you have to do is you go to Vegas, and Vegas is telling us to like Lester. I think that makes sense. You know, this team is much more likely to swing freely, rack up strikeouts, and take themselves out of the game rather than the Yankees, who actually have a degree of plate discipline and a semblance of offense and some self-respect, whereas the White Sox just swing at everything and try to hit home runs because they're in rebuild mode. And who cares? They're young. They don't care. You know, so I think you go to Lester, and I think you're okay with that. But I don't mind if you go to Archer, and I don't mind if you fade them both, because you know that those are going to be two of the most popular pitchers on the slate. And I think if you're fading them both, you can pivot to one of two guys, and it's either CeCe or it is Zach Godley. And I'm going to talk about CeCe first. I don't love this play, okay? I'm a Rays fan. I love the Rays. Their hard contact rate is through the roof. But I do not like the Rays right now against right-handed bats. Or excuse me, left-handed bats. Sorry, I love them against right-handed bats. I do not like them against right-handed bats. Fine, Tim Beckham hit a home run off of Wade Miley. Not going to happen again. Okay, let's be very clear. He makes hard contact, but that Wade Miley is a gas can, and CeCe, not quite that bad. Okay, Steven Souza, better against righties than he is against lefties. There are only two guys in this lineup that actually concern me against CeCe. And I think they're legitimate concerns. And I think if they scare you enough to say, will CeCe not get me 35 points? You know, 6 innings, quality start, 2 earned runs, 5 strikeouts, that kind of game. Right? You know, let me do the math. You know, and maybe the win. I don't know. But 6 innings and a quality start is 22, 5 strikeouts, 15, 37, and 2 runs. Okay, so 31 points. Fine. CeCe won't get me 30 or more points. If you think that Wilson Ramos and Evan Longoria are going to stop him from getting 30 points, then I don't blame you at all. And I kind of agree. I mean, Wilson Ramos and Evan Longoria are lefty mashers. And Evan Longoria has played against CeCe Sabathia how many goddamn times in his career? So, you know, and Wilson Ramos is a lefty masher. You know, like, he got stitches in his head and came back the next night. He had staples in his head because he got hit with a bat. Evan Longoria smashes CeCe Sabathia, 550 wOBA, 406 ISO. So you can go to just Evan Longoria and Wilson Ramos as one of my favorite two pairs. Steven Souza, though, remember, I don't think you have to chase him at 3-7 because his numbers against righties are better than they are against lefties. Yeah, I don't think you have to chase him in this situation. But, gosh, Wilson Ramos and Evan Longoria. But, you know, the thing about CeCe Sabathia and the reason that I like him, why would I say this? He's just been insane against lefties, right? So if all of a sudden you can get around Ramos and you can get around Longoria, Tim Beckham doesn't worry me, okay? Corey Dickerson has been ice cold. Steven Souza, we know, is better against righties. Logan Morrison, ice cold. Trevor Plouffe, is that going to scare you? Hacheverria, Borjos, give me a break. None of those guys are anything to be worried about. And the power lefties, you isolate because CeCe has an 11% hard contact rate to lefties. 11%. So I don't have to worry about Morrison, Brad Miller, Steven Souza. I don't have to worry about those guys. I just have to worry about the righties, and I just don't. Most of the righties don't scare me, except for Ramos and Longoria. So I don't know. Zach Godley, though, is really interesting. He is going into St. Louis, and he's been good, man. He's been very good. 14% swinging strike rate with a 26% K rate. Absolutely excellent. 3.2 XFIP and a 3.5 Sierra, limiting hard contact to 29%. Are the Cardinals hot right now? Yeah, they are, but I don't really care. This guy's splits are clean to righties and lefties. He's getting 4-1 ground balls to fly balls against lefties. So all of a sudden Matt Carpenter is out of the mix. The rest of these righties are kind of at a disadvantage. So I think we'll wait to see what Vegas has to say about this game, but I got to think that Godley is going to be a heavy favorite in this situation. His numbers against righties, good. 31% hard contact rate, only a 5% home run to fly ball ratio. With a 244 wOBA on the season allowed. So you certainly like Godley in this situation against this righty-heavy lineup. I think you compare him to CeCe, it's really no question. And he's more expensive, if I remember. Yeah, he's 8.5 to CeCe's, 7.6. So I don't know if you need the savings on this slate necessarily, but Godley has, he racked up 10 strikeouts and 10 strikeouts and 4 earned runs against Washington. Now, his most recent start, he started in Atlanta and kind of got shelled there. But we know that Atlanta has power lefties. In fact, he's faced them teams with some good lefties. He put in the work against St. Louis in the desert and gave up 3 runs, but 7 innings and 7 Ks. So you certainly are okay with that. Is he perfect? No. But does he have good strikeout upside? Yes. So I think that Godley is probably your best bet for tournament. I'm going to leave it at that. Godley is your best bet for a tournament, period. End the sentence. Now, the next guy that I'm very interested in, and I just want to talk about him. Chris Flexen for the Mets going up against the Padres. This dude, like I said, Mets version of Luis Castillo, getting called up from Double A. Yes, Double A. Okay. Listen to these numbers: 27% strikeout rate, 12% swinging strike rate with a 3.9% walk rate. I mean, that walk rate is Chris Sale good. 52% ground balls, only a 2.4 xFIP. Guy has elite numbers. He's been absolutely excellent. He's got juice, and he gets the Padres in his big league debut. Now, there's a very, very good chance that for whatever reason they say, hey, we're going to limit your innings here. We don't want you to pitch too many innings. All right, fine. You don't want him to pitch too many innings or pitches, whatever the case may be. But then again, the Mets really don't have a choice. Padres are still favored, which is kind of funny to me, but I think that that's Perdomo at home. That's what that is right there. But this kid at 6K, strikeout upside, nobody knows what he's going to be. Who knows? The Padres could really start to swing, give him a little bit of, give him a couple extra strikeouts. There are built-in strikeouts against the Padres. We know that. They're going to swing at everything. So at 6K, you could do worse. Let's move on to the sticks. Let's talk about the bats that we want to get together. I think the Cubs are going to easily be the most popular stud stack. That makes a lot of good sense to me. Stack the Cubs if you want against Mike Pelfrey. They have a 6.4 implied run total. I get it. They probably will score 6 runs. Pelfrey is bad. White Sox bullpen, not exactly great. Add it all up, makes total sense, okay? But he's not nearly as bad as James Shields, all right? And in fact, I want to just kind of be careful what you wish for against Pelfrey. He has only given up 16 starts. Guess how many times he's given up more than 3 runs? 4. 3 of those were only 4 runs. He's only had 3 multi-homer games out of 16. We have this picture of Pelfrey like he's fucking Ricky Nolasco. He's not. He's not Ricky Nolasco. He's not that bad. He's not good. He's not good by any measurables. Not at all. Doesn't strike anybody out. Too many walks, whatever the case may be. Fine. He's just annoying. He limits the damage. He induces ground balls. He's not going to let you take the top off and just absolutely blow the game open. So I think you have to be careful what you wish for with your Cubs stack. If you go there, it's very easy. Rizzo, Hayward, Hap, Schwarber. Maybe a Zobrist in there. Have no problem with the Zobrist. Hayward batting leadoff last night was kind of interesting. We'll see. Joe Maddon, you know, he's a weirdo. He may, you know, it could be John Jay tonight. So you have no idea who's going to be up in the order. Maybe Zobrist. Who knows? Who the hell knows who's going to be batting leadoff? He changes that lineup card all the time. You know, Rizzo at 4-3, though, is an excellent play. He's pricey, but I think with the cheap pitching on this slate, you can probably afford him. It's really not that hard. Happ and Schwarber underpriced again. So no problem going to those guys in this spot. Yeah, no problem with the Cubs at all. But I think I might go to Arizona. You know, if we know the Cubs are going to be chalky, I don't mind Arizona here. They're getting Luke Weaver. This Luke Weaver character, he got called up from AAA. We have a sample of two seasons against him. He got called up last year. You know, he got called up this year. I'll take the Diamondbacks all day against a righty. You know, we saw what they are capable of. You know, obviously, you start with the lefties, whether it's Blanco or Peralta in the leadoff spot. Yesterday it was Blanco. I think it probably will get back to Dave Peralta unless he's nursing some kind of undisclosed injury. Obviously, Jake Lamb. Daniel Descalso was in the sixth hole yesterday, so he's definitely interesting. He was pretty productive. So I have no problem with you know, with three lefties, and then I think you have to add either JD or Goldie as a fourth man kicker. Now, Goldie has the team's highest WRC plus against right-handed pitching. It's above 150. It's higher than Jake Lamb's. It's higher than JD Martinez. So it's pretty straightforward. You go with Goldie as far as, you know, wanting to get productive runs created. But JD did double dong. So JD's an animal. You know, so either one, I think it's fine. But you're spending $4K to get to him. If you don't want to spend the $4K to get to him, then you go with a three-man lefty. Probably my guess would be Peralta, Lamb, Descalso. I hope Descalso's in the six hole again. I don't know if he will be. He platoons with Owings and all that kind of thing. If it's Owings, I have no problem with that either. Owings is very good against right-handers. In fact, I have it up here somewhere. Owings is serviceable against right-handers. He's not quite Descalso, 92 WRC plus to the 117 WRC plus. But as far as hard contact, they have, you know, similar marks. Descalso's got him there too. Descalso's got him there as well. So, JD Martinez and Paul Goldschmidt, 46% hard contact against lefties. Well, isn't that interesting? Guess who's right there on that list as well? Mr. AJ Pollock. So, you know, you could definitely even go AJ Pollock if you want that, you know, as your kicker is even less expensive than Goldie or JD. So I have no problem. I have no problem with AJ Pollock in that situation. Wait for the lineup. I don't know what you're going to get from the Diamondbacks today, but I'm definitely going to take a look at Jake Lamb and David Peralta. And then I'm going to add what else I can fit on top of that. I think if you want to stack a team that, you know, is cost effective, and I say that lightly because they're actually really expensive right now. Miami against Robert Stevenson is very, very interesting here. Stevenson, we have some, you know, data on him over the last 2 years, very similar to Luke Weaver, been called up back and forth in 2016-17. Career splits, he's really struggled with lefties. Let's just get that out of the way. 5.2 xFIP. I mean, he struggles with righties too, don't get me wrong. 5.2 xFIP, though, to lefties, 2.8 home runs per nine career, with 45% hard contact rate against left-handers. Whoa. So instantly, you know, you're screaming for Justin Bour, but he's on the DL. But D. Gordon, Christian Yelich, I mean, Derek Dietrich, if you want, he's a cheap lefty. And because there's no Justin Bour, he's been in the, you know, he's been in the six hole. So I haven't, you know, I don't mind, I guess you could go to him too. You know, those are the three lefties that you're probably going to see in this lineup. Of course, you know, Stanton and Ozuna, I don't need to tell you that those guys are unbelievable power hitters. And, but between the two, you know, who hits righties better, it's Ozuna. You know, Ozuna smashes right-handed pitchers and really actually is not that great against lefties. So a guy who gives up, you know, a ton of contact like this in Stevenson has struggled with strikeouts. I think you can definitely go to Ozuna. But the three core guys, yeah, I mean, D. Gordon and Christian Yelich. I don't love Yelich. He doesn't always hit home runs, but he's a good base runner. He's going to be in the mix if they start to score. JT Realmuto, I have no problem with him. You know, I mean, if you want to get a catcher associated with your stack, I don't mind it. He's been hitting well, you know. Certainly came out of the All-Star break very productively. So I don't mind Realmuto in this situation at all if you can get him into your stack. But I think I'm definitely going to D. Gordon in this situation. I'll probably go to Christian Yelich as a reasonably priced option and add two more based on kind of lineup needs. I don't want to entirely Marlins outfield, but it is kind of different. Derek Dietrich, cheap, $2,200, by the way. So if you need some salary relief, he's a good spot, perhaps, in the six hole. Okay, pivoting. I think you're pivoting and trying to get leverage against the two best pitchers on the slate who have holes in their games, Archer and Lester, and I think you stack against them for leverage. Tournament-wise, it's an interesting strategy. You're instantly different. You're going up against basically a massive piece of the player pool because how highly owned do we think Archer and Lester are going to be? Lester, my guess, would be 30-40% more in cash, probably. Archer, 20%, you know, 10-20%, depending on how scared people are. I think Godley will pick up a decent amount of ownership too, 20%. But anyway, if you go to Archer, then I think you go with it's an interesting tournament lineup. You go to Archer and then you go with the Chicago White Sox. You're instantly different than every Lester line that's out there. Okay. That's called leverage. And there are righties who have power in this lineup, and we know there are righties who can hit home runs. We know there are righties on this team that are rock solid and they're cheap. Okay, and it's Melky, it's Abreu, it's Davidson, and Yoan Moncada. Okay, so Melky and Abreu have great career numbers. They've seen Lester plenty over the years. And Matt Davidson is just hot. He hits the ball, and when he hits the ball, he hits home runs. That's kind of all he does. So I have no problem going to those guys in this situation. And Yoan Moncada hit his first home run last night. He's been in the five or the six hole, I believe. Five holes. So you can get a nice, cheap White Sox stack for leverage. And, you know, you're relying on this as a Lester blow-up spot. And do those happen? Yep, they absolutely happen. Could it completely come back to bite you because these guys strike out too much? Yep, definitely. But if and when the Lester blow-up spot happens, you're on it. So that's an interesting one. I think that's a good spot to go to. And if you start Lester, you can go with the Yankees against Archer. So all the Archer lines, boom, right there. And you could even go with, you know, a Yankees and you add St. Louis in there. You basically attack the three most popular pitchers on the slate and hope that one of them gets unraveled and you have leverage on everybody who started those guys. So if you go to Lester in this situation, you know, you can get Yankees who can get to him. I think Brett Gardner in the leadoff position is an obvious one. He's a lefty. He can hit righties. He has decent BVP. He's seen Archer before. All that kind of thing. So you definitely like Gardner in the leadoff spot. I think if Clint Frazier bats up in the second two hole again, you got to go with him. He's just too cheap. He's going to see too many plate appearances. Even if two of those plate appearances are against the bullpen, you have no problem with that. The Rays bullpen is absolutely been a liability lately. You know, they've given up numerous like three, four run innings, like in that Texas series. They just blew games completely, so no problem with Clint Frazier. And then of course I think Gary would be my third, my power bat. I don't think you have to go to Aaron Judge. Matt Davidson is cheap, but Matt Holliday is cheap. I don't love the way he goes matches up against righties. I do love the way Gary matches up against righties and against Archer here. So I have no problem with Gary. He would be my power piece that I would use for leverage here against him. So that's it, guys. I think, you know, I mean, Yankees and White Sox are there for leverage. Miami's gonna probably be a little bit chalky after 22 runs. Arizona is probably my favorite stack on the board, but I think that the Cubs are very closely behind them. I just don't necessarily love stacking against Mike Pelfrey. So let's head over to FanDuel. Let's put all this together and see if we can build a lineup. Okay, so this actually works out pretty well. I think if you go to John Lester at the top of what you're doing here, you can go and basically try to find what are some of the better values on the slate positionally. I think this is a good night to try and just attack who the best play at every position is. There's a couple spots where it varies, that's for sure. I think there's a couple spots at first base and third base that you feel comfortable going in a couple different directions. But at places, you know, like second base, shortstop, and a lot of the outfield positions, there are just really rock solid values, and I think you kind of have to lock them in. So you go to Lester, right? And I think some of these values that I'm targeting are Wilson Ramos at catcher, 2,400. It's just a great spot against CC. You know, I love CC to neutralize some of the Rays just as a team, but I think if there's anybody who could hit a solo, you know, kind of get it going in one bat in the lineup, it'd be him, you know. And I think Tim Beckham is going to be a really popular shortstop. He's 2,600 and he's going to probably bat leadoff. That's just kind of a value you can't sneeze at. So, you know, Ramos and Beckham, you can go with, you know, you can absolutely add Longoria in there too. And you get a little cheap three-man raise. You know, that's not the worst thing in the world. I have no problem with the Rays righties in this situation. I just don't think the Rays are going to blow the top off. Like, my point in talking about CC was basically saying, is he going to get blown up for five, six runs? I don't think he is. I think if anything, they have one high quality inning, you know, where Longo or Ramos hits a shot off of him, with Beckham on base, that kind of thing. That's what I'm envisioning for the Rays. But if I get those two guys in there, then I have, you know, first, second, third, and two outfield spots. I'll go straight back to Ian Happ and Kyle Schwarber, just as cheapies. I know that they're probably going to be relatively highly owned, but they're just really good values at 27 and 2,800. So I'll go back to those guys. I have no problem with them against Mike Pelfrey. Not a great pitcher. Both of them have home run upside, and I'm not going to start somebody that I don't think has home run upside. And that will allow me to do a three-man Arizona stack of Goldie, Lamb, and Gregor Blanco. Now, I do think Gregor Blanco is going to get the start over Peralta. Peralta had a foul ball off the interior of his knee, sat out yesterday. They're traveling today. My guess is that they may give him one more day of rest, especially against, you know, a shitty kind of AAA pitcher, and then play him for the weekend series. So that would be my thought in this situation, that they'll start Blanco for one more day of rest. If they do, 100% of lineups are going to see Blanco. And then at second base is another one of those terrible, terrible positions. You know, it's just not fun. I went to D. Gordon. It's a little bit of a heavy price to pay. But again, in places where I don't like the options that I have, like at second base and shortstop, I'm going to the leadoff spots. And Beckham and Gordon are just leadoff batters, and that's kind of a default. So I think I get a nice three-man. I get access to Goldie, Lamb, and Blanco. I like that a lot. It could be Rizzo. It could be Rizzo and Bryant. You know, no problem with that. If you really love the Cubs, it could be Rizzo and Bryant. I have no problem with that. I just think that I think Arizona is in just as good a position as the Cubs are, even though Vegas likes the Cubs more. Mike Pelfrey just kind of tilts me into oblivion. It's more principle than anything. So that's it. Lester, Ramos, Goldie, Gordon, Lamb, Beckham, Happ, Schwarber, Blanco. Three-man Arizona, pair of Cubs bats, and then some fill-in guys who are going to be batting leadoff. Well, excuse me, a pair of Rays bats, and then Gordon as a fill-in leadoff. So 3-2-2, and Gordon one off. So that's where we're at, guys. That's it for the lineup. It's an ugly slate. Early slate's a little ugly too, but good luck. You know, throw a little bit out there, have a little fun with it, you know. And we'll be back for the big Friday takedown, Friday slate with me and my man Josh Fernandez. So we'll talk to you later. Good luck in your contest, and we will see you tomorrow.